This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott. I'm here with Lauren Denyer. How are you, Lauren?
I'm very well, Chris. How are you?
Good. You're one of the lecturers at WST School in London.
That's right, yes.
And you teach Level 4.
Yeah.
You also do some of the activities and enrichment is what you
exactly,
call it.
Exactly. It's to give students opportunity to do learning outside of their online or classroom lessons.
What I want to touch on today is just a little bit, this will be quite short. I just want to talk about the D4, which is sparkling wines.
That's right.
And a little bit about the exam for the tasting of sparkling wines. We've spoken earlier and we've talked a little bit in detail about the SAT guide. And we've said that the SAT guide for sparkling wine is pretty much identical to the still wines.
It is completely, yes.
So there's nothing new or anything, unlike level 3 where in theory you had to talk about creaminess or aggressiveness of the bubbles or delicacy of the bubbles.
No, you don't have to talk about the bubbles. What you do need to do is write a quality assessment that is specific to sparkling wines, which will be talking about dosage and acid and sweetness, because we have a lot of, a lot of sparkling wines have in one way or another some sugar in them. Whether you can taste that or not is another thing. But yeah, so you do have to think about that. You have to think about whether there's autolysis or not. So, and that can link to potentially complexity in the wine. So those are a few elements to consider in your quality assessment that you wouldn't necessarily for D3 or D5, because they're different types of wines.
Well, let's get into that a little bit of detail. So dosage.
Yes.
Which is how much sugar you stick in the end there to sweeten it up at the very end.
Yeah.
Well, for traditional methods, sparkling wines.
Yes. Well, you can do it for others, for tank method. But yeah, it's one of those terms that you use when you talk about production of traditional method in particular. Yeah, and just adding either a little bit of sugar, maybe it's brut, or more for demi-sec, for example. And so you'd need to discuss that and how that, affects the balance of the wine.
Do you need to identify the wine as or zero dosage or brew?
You don't need to use those terms, but when you're tasting the wine, you would need to mention the sweetness level. So if it was brut, I would say usually they're anything between dry and off dry. It depends on, this is a perception,
think of brut as dry.
It tends to be, but then I guess a brut champagne would come across as dry, but then a brut prosecco might seem a little bit sweeter.
Because of the lower acidity.
Exactly. So, and I think there is sugar in there, and sometimes, brut is anything, isn't it, from around 6 to 12 grams a litre. So for someone, that 10 grams might actually feel a little bit off dry. For someone else, it might be dry. So, there's a bit of bit of flexibility there, but so if it was a demi-sec, for example, then you'd probably be looking at medium dry, depending again on the acidity. So you need to reflect this level of sweetness if it's evident on the sweetness part of the SAT.
Okay, and then you talked about autolysis or lack of autolysis. Do you have to sort of give a indication of how long the autolysis has been going for?
In the quality assessment, it is expected that you would mention how long you think that autolysis is. So, if you're getting quite a lot of autolysis and it feels sort of developed autolysis, toasty or brioche, for example, then that would be likely something that probably has spent more than 36 months on the lees. So that would be sort of a longer period of time. Whereas maybe something that's spent, 18 to 24 months, you might notice that maybe there isn't such obvious autolysis and what you've got is a bit less developed, a bit more bready maybe. And then, of course, you've got wines where there's been very little, 9 months or maybe none, and you'd need to remark on that as well.
Okay, what else do you need to talk about?
So, like I said, the balance between acid and dosage is quite a good thing to talk about.
But some of that's stylistic, isn't it? It's like the wine's really acidic, but that's because they've put zero dosage in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, we don't focus so much on the zero dosage because they are still, on the global market quite niche. We know through the theory knowledge that, it's a category. But in tasting exams, it may well be, it might come up as zero dosage, but it hasn't happened that much lately. But yeah, I think then you would probably talk about the acidity and the fruit concentration, because if you haven't got the sugar, then you're going to have to look at balance elsewhere. So you might look at that instead. We'll look at, you know, the definition of the fruit and the other characteristics. So, you know, often I think with sparkling wines, you know, as opposed to fortified wines, you expect fruit in all of these wines, really, unless they're really old. And then actually, how many of these wines are designed to age? Because even non-vintage sparkling wines, traditional method sparkling wines, aren't really designed for any lengthy aging. So, you know, you do need to be talking about fruit in particular on these wines, talking about the ripeness or the just ripe characteristics as well.
I must admit, with sparkling wines, especially things like champagne, I do find it hard to get into the fruit sometimes, particularly when you've got dominant autolic characteristics.
Yeah, I suppose it is a bit of a struggle, because sometimes, yes, you're right, you can get something that really is very autolytic, but you know, fundamentally there has to be fruit there.
And support, it has to be, because it'd be hollow without it.
Yeah, so... But
finding it...
Yeah, yeah. I guess, you know, it's a measure of a really good sparkling wine, is traditional method sparkling wine, is where you do have, you know, obvious fruit there, as well as autolysis, which hopefully isn't too dominant. It should be, in my view, should play a supporting role, but be there or nonetheless. So, yeah, you know, it has its own struggles, definitely, when tasting and assessing sparkling wines. But, yeah, we do need to account for the autolysis and the length of time that the wine has spent on the lees, texture of the wine, and then I think you can refer to the mousse or the bubbles through that, and the length and how the length, you know, describing the length as well. So there's a few little differences between your general SAT quality assessment for sparkling wine.
Okay. And you mentioned a lot of these wines typically don't age. Obviously, there is a mark for bottle aging.
Yes.
A lot of them, you'd say, not suitable for further aging?
I think, well, yeah, again, it depends, doesn't it? Because even though I would say, you know, most non-vintage champagne producers want people to buy their wines and drink them within quite a small window, actually you can age some of these wines, but whether they're designed for it or not is another matter. But yes, definitely for potential for aging, there's a lot that, you know, aren't particularly tank method. I mean, Prosecco, Asti, I think it's quite clear that they're very expressive fruity wines. So, you know, straight away you'd say, well, these are designed to be drunk in their youth. I don't think you need to go into talking too much about supporting evolution, because actually, you know, do we really need to talk about fruit concentration and acidity and the fact that it's not going to last? I think it's very much a given that it's a general style that is designed to be drunk when it's youthful. So I think those would be your justifications. Then on the other hand, you might have something like a very youthful vintage. So something that's what students tend to struggle with the most, is when they've got something that actually, again, isn't quite there. It's a little bit lacking, but it has got that potential to really evolve and become quite exciting.
What, because it's lacking a little bit of fruit and concentration?
No, I think the issue seems to be often with vintage champagnes. I've noticed this in the classroom, is that they tend to be less autolytic, often evidently autolytic, than a non-vintage sometimes.
There.
Yeah, it's there, particularly with the really youthful styles. Again, it can depend a little bit from vintage to vintage, but you'll find that it's the fruit tends to be riper and there's more concentration on the palate, but overall, it doesn't seem to pack the punch that a non-vintage can. It's almost like non-vintage is a little bit more flirtatious, if you see what I mean, whereas the vintage is being a little bit more restrained and waiting for the right time.
Okay. So, and you're looking for more oxidative characteristics coming through, perhaps?
Not necessarily. I suppose it depends on the methods of production. But I think because you've got a lot of fruit, maybe more fruit, the autolysis isn't so dominant, and I think people get confused by that.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, because in non-vintage, they can be very... Especially if it's had 3 years on...
Yeah, yeah, like a... Yeah, Bollinger or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that can be very, very, very autolytic. Okay, and so what you're finding is it might have more autolysis, but it's being balanced by the fruit.
Yeah.
Because the fruit's a little bit more in your face or whatever. And
I think on a surface level, you know, what do you want to drink right now? Often the non-vintage is more obviously... appealing. So that's something you've got to kind of get through.
And would you, if you thought it was a vintage champagne, as a general rule, vintage champagnes, apart from recently to Scorch, which we'll touch on in a second, they normally are expected to age as well in bottle after production.
Yes, exactly. I think that's the main thing, isn't it, really? You know, when you look at investments and how much these wines go up in price, you know, it's because they are, well, yeah, they get rarer, but they also are more interesting and just more delightful, I think, with age. So, yeah.
So do you have to talk about how you think the vintage champagne might develop?
Yeah, you would have to say, you know, right now, it's, you might say in your quality assessment, it's still youthful. Over time, it will, you know, develop because it's got, so you, here you do have to identify the fact that it has got more concentration, more fruit concentration, that maybe the autolytic characteristics are more supportive, but they are a bit more developed because they ought to be because it's spent more time on the lees. Well. Yeah. And over time, what you're going to see is this evolution, including these tertiary characteristics, which will play well with the rest of the characteristics in the wine.
Recently disgorged wines spend a lot of time on the lees, an incredible length of time, and then they're disgorged. But they're not really going to last because they've been protected effectively from oxidation their entire life because the lees is an antioxidant.
Yes.
And as a result, when you finally do get them, their life expectancy is actually quite short. Mm. You know, it's in a year or 2 years. Would you need to identify that under your bottle? Because that sounds hard.
So. And they're quite expensive, aren't they? I don't know if WSET are going to be getting hundreds of bottles of Bollinger RD, you know.
You're saying they're just too tight for that type of
wine. I don't know. Maybe there'll be bottle variation in case some of them haven't been so recently disgorged or recently released. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we need to know that they exist and what they are. But in an exam situation, I don't think anyone needs to specify that it's been recently disgorged.
And it's a flight of three wines. Is there a conclusion about the flight that you need to draw, or are they a bit like the random?
No, they are generally random. However, I have seen in the past some questions that do ask about sweetness levels, so separate from what the actual level is itself as part of the tasting note. So account for the sweetness levels in wines 1, 2, and 3. So you've got like a demi-sec champagne or an Asti or something. So you need to say acknowledge that there is sweetness and how it got there, basically.
I always think of things as the tasting exam and the theory exam, but in the sparkling wines, it's one exam.
It's one exam in two parts, but all at the same time.
But they could link in the theory part.
No, they don't do that. And I don't know if this is a thing that happens all the time, but I've noticed that often the questions, theory questions, don't tend to relate to what's in the tasting, the wines that are tasted. Yeah. But, you know, I don't want to be quoted on that because, you know, next time it might be loads of questions about Lambrusco and then a Lambrusco in the flight, so you don't know. But yeah, there aren't any questions where you need to develop any further theoretical knowledge on what's in the glass. Just you need to mention, it might ask you identification questions, also might ask you about methods of production.
Lambrusco raises an interesting point because tannins are something you don't normally talk about with red wines, but some of the Australian reds in particular do have some tannin structure to them. So do you get marks in the...
So it's the same. It's exactly the same as for the SAT for D3, D4, apart from the alcohol level. So yeah, tannins need to be talked about for... There's two red wines that could come up in the... they're on the specification for D4, and they are Lambrusco, so the different styles within that, and Sparkling Shiraz.
Aussie Shiraz, yeah. So they could come up. Normally you wouldn't mention tannins, but if you get a sparkling red, do talk...
It's a red wine, talk about tannins. Rosé, no. Red, yes.
Perfect.